Hello and welcome to this Do Something for Nothing podcast takeover for The Conduit. My name is Joshua Coombs and I'm going to be your co-host alongside my friend and Conduit member, Dr. Ebony Escalona. For this series, we've interviewed some really interesting people who are doing things outside of the box to benefit their communities and our planet. For a bit of context on Do Something for Nothing and how it began, in 2015, I was working as a hairdresser in a salon in London. I started going out and offering free haircuts to men and women who were experiencing homelessness and living on the street. This grew into a movement of other people getting involved with their skills and their time to positively affect the lives of people around them. The conversations we've had really embody this spirit, so we're excited to share them with you and we hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
Hal reminds us how important our own personal connection is to nature to establish our internal motivation to protect it. And this is precisely what Seafull, her charity, does. Hal is a vet, pro paddleboarder, conservationist, and filmmaker. Listen to her share her incredible tales of solo trips across white water, right through to how children encountering our seas for the first time create change-making experiences.
Cal Major, thank you so much for joining us on this Do Something for Nothing podcast takeover with The Conduit. We were absolutely delighted that you, the ocean advocate, the sporty vet, the one who educates and inspires all the generations with the work you do, which we can't wait to unveil and showcase through this conversation. So it'd be really nice to hear from you what shaped you making this pivot from, you know, an animal healthcare professional as a vet into something quite different.
Thank you for having me here. This really is my pleasure to speak to you guys, and really appreciate you inviting me onto the podcast. I was thinking about this question, and I think there are actually a few different moments. I don't think there was one pivotal moment. I think the first moment actually happened before vet school, so before I even went to study veterinary medicine. I'd always wanted to work with animals, to be a vet. And then just before I went to vet school, I learned to scuba dive, and I scuba dived on Australia's Great Barrier Reef. And that was it. From that moment, I was just obsessed with the sea. I'd been breathing underwater with the most amazing multicolored corals and enormous turtles and sharks. And it was completely eye-opening to me, this entire other world underwater, where I'd never felt so much peace or wonder and awe. And I just felt really at home there. And that was a really pivotal moment for me. You know, up until that point, I'd surfed lots and spent time at the beach and really enjoyed being by the sea, but actually seeing that world for myself was really pivotal. And so while I was at uni, I was really interested in marine conservation and anything I could do as a vet student, as a vet in the marine space. But then kind of followed a fairly typical career path, came out of uni, did a year in mixed practice as a vet, and then went into small animal practice. And so the second kind of really pivotal moment for me was while I was working as a vet, I took a trip in my camper van with one of my best mates up to this tiny little island off the Scottish coast called Tyree. And it's tiny, like it's really small. There's only a handful of people who live there. There's one tree on the island, or there was when I was there. Like it's really small, but it's in the middle of, you know, in the middle of the ocean. And we were having the best time. We were windsurfing and surfing and, you know, really decompressing from that really hard work veterinary environment, like just having our holiday, amazing, loads of ocean time. And then we went to a beach one day that was, on this really remote beach that was absolutely just covered in plastic. Like I was wading knee deep in parts of it in plastic. And obviously hadn't come from that island, you know, this was so few people lived there. And so that was a real moment for me of really starting to realize how much humans are impacting our seas. So that kind of started the whole paddle against plastic movement. And then there was another moment again, once I was within the kind of paddle against plastic journey, I've been speaking to people about plastic for years and taking on these big expeditions and making films about plastic and talking about plastic. And then I came to this community. I just paddled around the Mull of Galloway, which is this big sticky out headland into the middle of the sea. I've paddled around it at night through horrendous tidal races. Like, it was this really scary journey. I've been paddling for like 20 hours and like washed up at this village called Port Patrick on the west coast of Scotland. Like, just absolutely exhausted. And having done the most terrifying paddle of my life, and was taken in by this community. I was kind of like passed out on the beach, and they're like, no, come to the pub. So ended up in the pub in this tiny community, got to know everybody. And when I told them about why I was paddling and, you know, talking about plastic, and they were just so delighted to tell me about what they were doing about plastic. And it helped me to realize that this, you know, this community there, they loved the place they lived, they loved the West Coast, they loved the beaches, they were really connected to them. They were really acknowledging of how important the ocean was for their mental health and well-being. And that's why they were all individually doing their bits within their community to tackle plastic pollution. And it kind of was this like light bulb moment of, oh, right, so I can talk to people till I'm blue in the face about plastic in the ocean and how it's important that we eliminate it or reduce it, and its impact on turtles or the marine environment at large, and how that impacts our health. But actually, if we don't have a personal connection to the sea, then that's going to fall on deaf ears. That people aren't going to really understand that. And so I think that was a really important moment for me as well, that kind of understanding of where the well-being benefits of being by the sea and an appreciation of that, and then wanting to protect the place, really kind of came together, and that people will protect what they love, but they can only love what they know. So that was kind of the almost the birthing of the charity Seafull. It's I have this like light bulb moment of, this is what I'm going to do with my life. It feels like very much a journey, and it sometimes grabs me, you know, and shakes me and teaches me something new, and there'll be like a little diversion into the next stage of the journey. It's really interesting to reflect on that.
Yeah, that's really, really beautiful to hear. And there was, yeah, maybe it wasn't this light bulb moment, but clearly there was this epiphany. Like you said, there was this epiphany that without that connection to the issue that you're speaking about, yeah, you know, obviously that's the bridge to galvanize more advocacy for that, when people are reconnected to these things, you know, reconnected to, in this case, the ocean or any of the kind of the issues we may face. That's a really important piece, isn't it, to sort of to get people kind of feeling that. So I'm really interested, because I really want to hear about like the charity in Seafull and how that's happening now. But as I was kind of listening to that, I was already thinking, wow, that's amazing. You're paddling, what, for 20 hours? And what I needed to sort of go back and just think, so when you were talking about, you know, paddle against plastic, like how did you do that? So for people who don't know about that work, what did you do to go out and, obviously raising awareness around this, and I assume raising money or funds in some way, but what was it you did as an individual when you were paddling against plastic?
Yeah. So, I mean, after having seen that beach in Tyree, wow, like that was just really eye-opening. And then after that, every single beach I went to, you know, I was living in Plymouth, I was surfing in Devon and Cornwall every weekend, and every single time I came out of the sea, I was finding plastic on the beaches. And the more I saw it, the more I saw it, if that makes sense. And I was starting to learn to paddleboard, this amazing new sport that I'd just been introduced to, that meant that I could explore further afield. And I was going to these tiny little remote coves, and every single one was just covered in plastic. Just, I remember this tiny little cove on the south coast of Cornwall that you could only get to from the sea, like you couldn't get there by land. And I pulled out, you know, nearly 100 plastic bottles out of this tiny cove. And I just really wanted to talk to people about it. I really wanted to find a way to show people what was happening. But at that point in time, you know, that was 2015, 2016, there wasn't heaps of stuff in the media about it. And anything that was in the media was really negative, like really focusing on the doom and gloom, on the, this is killing animals, on the fact that it was this global issue. And actually, one of the most common things I was finding on these beaches was plastic water bottles. And I thought, this is such a simple like solution to this. You know, in the UK, we have clean and healthy and free drinking water from our taps. So is there a way that actually I can help encourage people to use a refillable bottle instead of a plastic bottle? And so that's kind of where the first expedition came from. I decided to paddle around the whole Cornish coast encouraging people to use a refillable water bottle instead of a plastic one. And, you know, I was very naive at the time. I thought that paddling around Cornwall would be absolutely glorious weather. You know, I was going to get a suntan and a six pack and like be paddling with dolphins every day. And actually for 3 weeks, I was paddling through gale force winds and waves that were bigger than me and getting chased by seals around Land's End and trying to make a fire with no idea how to make a fire and like camping on these beaches, like, literally just sleeping on my paddleboard on beaches. And it was absolutely amazing. I loved it. I loved the adventure. And that's where the kind of expedition started. I started basically taking on these journeys to talk to people about what was going on with plastic in our seas and to highlight to them what's going on, but what we can do about it as well. So the following year, I paddled around the Isle of Skye in Scotland completely alone and was even more thrown into the deep end, learning how to wild camp and forage for food and water. And then from Land's End to John O'Groats, and then down the River Severn. And then last year around Scotland. So I kind of used those expeditions as a way to talk to people about the issues and to help show people how we as communities and individuals, we can be part of the solutions. Because that's the most important thing, like giving people some action to take, some hope, some rather than just saying, look how bad this is. And along the way, I've learned about how important this connection is.
I think we need to add as well there that this woman was often the first woman to do said expedition. So, you know, she was also breaking boundaries in lots of other ways. I think that's really important to state. And I know that she has no ego at all. But I just think yes, you were doing this incredible stuff for our environment and for advocacy, but you're also doing something incredible, I think, for women in sport, for paddleboarding as a sport as well, and for yourself personally as a real challenge, because I know they're not easy. You have these huge oscillations of highs and lows going and doing, you know, something like that. So I just wanted to shout that out.
Thanks, Seb. Yeah, and it was definitely a real... Gosh, I see the world so differently now after having taken on those expeditions and seen my own capabilities and the capabilities of those around me much differently as a result of that. And I think had I not been driven into taking these expeditions on because of the stories I wanted to tell and because of the people I wanted to reach, I'm not sure I would have done them just because. But I'm really glad I had that opportunity to do that, because actually what I've learned through those expeditions from a personal point of view and all the people I've connected with along the way has been just remarkable. Like I don't think there's any better way of expanding your, this sounds really cliched, but expanding your horizons and understanding yourself. You know, you have to take this journey. You have to be self-sufficient. You have to look after yourself. I think it's very, very empowering. Yeah.
What were those things, Cal? Like, you know, I can imagine some of those themes that come through, the things you learn about yourself and the world and community, but I don't know if you want to touch on maybe some of those personal learnings and those kind of, you know, those community and world learnings as well. Because I know Joshua talks a lot about this as well in his work, you know, on these expeditions across streets and seas.
Yeah, well, I think first of all, you can form such a deep connection with people that you meet when you're doing something like this. Like, and you must find this as well, Joshua, you're really putting yourself out there. You're putting your heart and soul into something that you care about and you believe in. And I think that that creates such an incredible human response from the people that you meet. The amount of people who helped me along, you know, all the years I've been doing these expeditions, who have gone out of their way to put me up or to feed me or to support me in some way or other. You know, this last expedition I did was paddling around Scotland, and that had a very different focus. That wasn't so much about plastic pollution. That was around the ocean's role in the climate and biodiversity crises and how every single one of us is actually connected to the sea and how it's important for all of our lives. And I was speaking to communities around the coast, from everything from conservationists to fishers, children, trauma survivors, like really varied demographics of people who have a connection to the sea. And I think because I was also being vulnerable by taking on these journeys and, you know, literally at the mercy of Mother Ocean and all her power and all her, you know, amazing awe and wonder, I was at her mercy. I think that kind of gave me a vulnerability from which I could talk to these people, and they could then be vulnerable with me. And some of the conversations we had were so powerful, and I feel so grateful for the opportunity that kind of putting myself out there has brought in terms of connecting with other humans. So I think that's probably the most powerful thing. Yeah,
the insights I'm sure that you have through those experiences. I do feel that listening to you talk, there must have been so many times that you were so connected to that fine line almost sometimes between surviving life and death. Like, you're right in the ocean, you're there. I mean, and obviously you're very adept at what you do, but you know, you're putting yourself in scenarios where you're right out there on the edge of things. And you know, and then when you have, I'm sure, those moments where I imagine you're going into shore and you're at some beach somewhere and you're trying to light a fire, or you're whatever, you're just reflecting on these kind of hours you spent out at sea. I can imagine the byproduct of that for your mental health is something really, really incredible, you know. And that's why obviously, like, this message is so important for so many people. Obviously, that's going to look very different to people, you know, listening, different to people who may not have even swam in the ocean before, but sort of starting that journey into, you know, finding kind of what that looks like for you, finding that connection in your own way, that edge, and pushing the envelope for people to sort of come out of themselves, out of their comfort zone, reconnect in that way.
Yeah.
It's going to establish the same feeling, you know, that kind of, because I guess, you know, when you said, you know, do I feel similarly? Like, I do, through, in a very, very different context, you know, through connecting with people, I sort of go out on the edge to places where, you know, there might be certain groups of people that, you know, might have a lot of difficulty, you know, and challenges with certain traumas and sort of certain addictions when I'm out on the street and working with people who are experiencing homelessness, and especially when it's really concentrated. That's my version of sort of going outside of what might look like the city that day to try and kind of go beyond myself in some way. But I can only imagine when you're working with people where you said you've spoke to certain people with certain traumas, that this work is so crucial, what you're doing to try and improve people's kind of mental health, to try and just try and sort of forge what I think is a recovery of, like, our inherent connection to nature, because humans are human beings, whether we grow up in inner city London, Birmingham, Leicester, Manchester, wherever, or whether we grow up in a rural community where nature's already part of our life. Deep within us is this, like, this yearning to come back to, like, you know, the things that I think are just really, really part of when you strip away the, you know, what modern society looks like for some people, just really important parts of being here and this life experience. And there is a question on the end of this, which is you know, sort of that so you know, I'm just really interested in, from those experiences, sort of now sort of maybe entering us into the conversation around seafall, that kind of moment where you realize this could be important for all of our mental health collectively in some way, and like how that journey began. That'd be really interesting to hear about.
Thank you, Joshua. And I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of saying that for each person, it's a personal experience and it's a personal connection. And I'm very conscious not to suggest that, you know, for me, you know, for me, surfing and paddleboarding and swimming and diving and free diving, all that stuff is, I just can't get enough of it. And that's what makes me tick and that's what makes me well. But I'm not at all suggesting that everybody in our country should be doing that, because that's what's going to be beneficial for them. And I think that was the first thing that we were really careful about when we were kind of creating our messaging around seafall, is to make sure that we're not trying to impose a certain experience or a certain feeling for the ocean, but rather allow people to experience it for themselves, allow them to form their own connection in a way that's personal and meaningful, and help them discover that and help them perpetuate that. You know, as you quite rightly also said, we as humans, we have developed over the, you know, centuries in nature. This is the first, you know, recent history is the first time that we've seen ourselves as separate to nature, and see nature as something that can be something for us, something for us to extract from, whether that's, you know, genuinely extractive processes, which are the ones that are destroying our planet and also our own home, or whether that's our kind of the way we think about nature as being something that we can benefit from, that we can take from. Like, we've become so disconnected from our natural world, consciously, and in some ways, more broadly as well. So not only, you know, do we live in concrete boxes that are physically distracted from nature, but also the way that our societies work. We've put a barrier between us and nature, and the way we talk about nature is as something separate, and it's just not the case. Like, you take the ocean, for example. Even, you know, Ebony, you're in London at the moment. I know you've got the Thames, but you're not exactly on the coast, and yet, you know, the oxygen in every second breath you breathe still comes from the ocean. The ocean produces half the oxygen we breathe, more than half the oxygen we breathe. It's absorbed 25% of our anthropogenic carbon emissions already and continues to do so. It provides us with food, medicine, and, you know, people like me, provides us with solace and joy and awe. It regulates our planet's temperature. It's responsible for biodiversity, which is the one thing that keeps our planet going and keeps us, you know, being able to eat and live and breathe. So I think with the sea, you know, if you tell someone those kind of stats about a forest, they can understand that. You know, if you say a forest produces your oxygen, cool, yeah, there are trees, we get that. If you say a forest produces your food, oh yeah, I can see there's, you know, maybe wild boars that we'd shoot and eat or whatever, you know, or little berries that we can eat. You know, people can visualize that with terrestrial ecosystems. But with the sea, it's out of sight and out of mind, especially in the UK. You look at the ocean and it just looks black and dark a lot of the time. You can't see what's under there. Most people, I would say, in the UK have not been snorkeling in the UK and haven't seen the richness of life and the absolute wonders which are underwater. And I've had the great privilege of doing that. And I just want to share that with people. And I want more people to have that opportunity to experience it and to see it and to understand it for themselves and to see just how much joy can be brought from being by the sea and to then form that connection to it and then maybe want to protect it. And that doesn't mean they have to be activists, but that might mean that, you know, next time a politician is talking to them about their policies and wanting to protect the sea as one of their policies, they may think, well, the sea's part of me as well, actually. I understand what the sea is to me. Or it might be that, you know, they talk to somebody else about the sea and just kind of really gently and not forcefully helping more people to understand that they are part of the sea. And that the sea is part of them, and that they have the right and ability to care for the ocean and to stand up for its protection. And also, whether you live in a massive city or whether you live by the coast, the ability to experience blue spaces mindfully. So our charity, one of the things that we do is we help people have mindful experiences of blue spaces. And that could be canals, rivers, lakes, reservoirs, or the ocean itself, because they're all connected, aren't they, right? So and it's not this kind of, you know, when we first set up the charity, I was thinking, oh, you know, we'll get kids from London out to the beaches in Devon and get them to see the sea. But actually, we want to get kids from London experiencing the blue spaces in London, where they can go back there time and time again and go for a walk on the canal or go paddleboarding on the canal, whatever. And we also realized that actually, you know, even within these coastal communities like Cornwall and Devon, there are many kids there who don't get to experience the sea. One of the best things we did last year, which still blows my mind when I think about it, was we took a group of young carers. Actually, we did this trip a couple of times, but we took groups of young carers, 12 to 21-year-olds, out to Lundy Island, which is the UK's first marine protected area, and just the most beautiful place. It's this island in the middle of the Atlantic, and it's because it's a marine protected area, like underwater it's just like kelp forests and seals and starfish and anemones, and wherever you look it's just this magical underwater world. And we got the kids snorkeling, and most of them had never even been on a boat before, let alone put their face underwater. And it was genuinely, I really do think it was genuinely life-changing for a lot of them. We had seals coming and interacting with us. We had this one kid who, bless him, you know, he has serious caring responsibilities. His father's no longer with him, and his mother is, you know, he cares for her illness. And it gave him the chance to be a kid. Like, he was absolutely terrified to get in the sea. He was absolutely terrified. I held his hand for an hour before he would actually get in the sea. And then, he'd gone from kind of being this quite kind of like just really cheery kid to just being really scared. And it took me ages to get him actually in the sea. And then as soon as he put his face in the water and saw what was there, literally an hour of me holding his hands and encouraging him. As soon as he put his face in the water, saw what he goes, he looks and he goes, oh, miss, this is epic. I wish I'd done it sooner. And that was him gone. And he let go of my hand and he swam off. And he was the last out of the water for that session. He was the first in for the next session. And he was just, yeah, he was just absolutely like his whole this whole world opened up for him and his face opened up. And the next session he had seals coming and playing with him and like nibbling his fins. And he just thought it was the best thing. And we did that session a couple of times on, you know, on the second session, we had one young lady, she was about 18, really lovely girl, again, absolutely terrified of the water. But I got, managed to get her in eventually. I held her hand the whole time. My hand was like blue by the end of it because she'd been squeezing so tight. But at the end of it, she's like, oh, I'd like to actually, she was going to go on and study outdoor sciences and outdoor education and wanted to spend more time on the water, wanted to learn to paddleboard. And, you know, those experiences, it's not just about the fear, but it's about, you know, kind of overcoming that fear for those kids, but kind of really showing them what is there and what's available for them. And, you know, we have dolphins swimming around the boat. And, you know, I feel very lucky to say I'm quite used to that. Like, I spent a lot of time on boats. I've seen a lot of dolphins. And even for me, that is one of the most magical experiences. And to be able to share that with kids who've never seen it before. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be these spectacular experiences in marine protected areas. Like, we took a group of kids, quite young kids, actually, they were about 10 or 11, from inner city Glasgow to the Isle of Arran, which is, again, a marine protected area, Scotland's first no-take zone. And we got them in the sea. And, you know, I was a bit worried that they were going to be cold and not want to go in, and that, you know, where we could get to from actually walking from shore, we wouldn't actually see that much. And there was just a little bit of seagrass and a few fish, the odd starfish, loads of little crabs. And it's after 20 minutes, it's like the kids just, I thought we'd stay in 20 minutes. I was like literally pulling them out of the water after an hour, like, we're going to miss the bus. Like, they were absolutely loving it. And one of the girls kind of turned and said to me afterwards, she said, I said, how was that? Did you enjoy that? How was it? And she said, oh, it was amazing, because I got to see what was underwater and I got to see something that I never thought I would see. But now I know it's there. It also makes me angry, because now I know what's underwater. It makes me mad that we treat the ocean like a trash can. I was like, yes, that's it. Like, that's exactly it. And I think, yeah, when we first set up the charity, I felt like it would have to be this really prescribed way of kind of helping people to connect with the sea in a way that's meaningful for them. And, you know, and then how do we translate that to pro-environmental behaviour? How do we help them, you know, how do we help people actually spend more time in blue spaces in their own time for their mental well-being? How do we make sure that it is beneficial for their well-being? But actually, I think stepping back and just facilitating that mindful experience and letting them experience it in their own way is the most important thing that we do. And we do some stuff with adults as well, which is very different, I think, in a lot of ways, because there's kind of a different journey for those adults than there is for those kids. But it's definitely one of the most, it's just, the words have escaped me, as you can see, like, to be able to describe that change in somebody's demeanor and that potential opening of the world for them. And I feel very, very privileged to be able to share what I know I'm so privileged to be able to experience with other people.
Well, I've got goosebumps and I've got tears in my eyes. And there's also nothing better than listening to someone who can facilitate that, and the joy in your voice and in your, obviously no one can see what Cal's doing, but Cal's hands are animated, and, you know, it's just, it's just incredible, because not only is it lighting those children and adults up, it's lighting you up. It's keeping that flame burning inside, because all the guests that we invite on, they encompass real, they embody real rebel courage. It's really hard to go against the rat race and decide, I'm going to go and set up something like Seafall. I'm going to go and take on a challenge like circumnavigating on my own around Scotland. You know, like, this is difficult. It's difficult to say, oh God, I don't have a job anymore and I'm going to do this. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that from you personally, how you can keep that fire burning and step away from that rat race. And also, because I think there might be the answer maybe also joined too, how do you look after yourself, Cal? Because you're expending a ton of energy, not only physically, but mentally in these journeys. So let's talk about stepping away from the rat race, and let's talk about how do you nurse? You can't pour from an empty cup.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that's a really important question, and something that I feel like is quite a timely question, because I'm asking those questions of myself at the moment. I feel the more and more I look at society, and I look at a lot of the industries and a lot of the kind of the status quo of how we as humans live our life in this society, the more I want to rebel against it. And I love the word that you use, rebel, because I've been honestly reflecting on this the last few days. My best mate in the whole world was up this weekend, and I'd been at a conference last week, and it was really busy and it was brilliant, but I was so exhausted by the end of it and just needed to decompress. And I spent a lot of time talking to my friend about how I feel like I'm rebelling against what's expected of us. But I feel like what's expected of us as humans is not very human a lot of the time. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty in my life, and that is exhausting. And at the minute, I'm finding it really, really challenging. But I'm also so grateful for the freedom that that brings, and the freedom to... So, for example, I was at a conference working. It was about the film industry, natural history film industry. It was brilliant, amazing. But actually, that's all dictated to by somebody else. Everything is dictated to by somebody else. And actually, what I can do, so I make a lot of films with my boyfriend, James. He's a professional filmmaker. And I love working with him, and we make lots of films. And actually, being able to do that ourselves, we can tell the stories that really need telling in a way that is authentic and honest, rather than a watered down version when you're dictated to by somebody else and, you know, a commissioner or a channel or whatever. And that's a real privilege. And I feel like I'm rebelling against a lot of things. I feel like I'm rebelling against what's expected of me as a woman, as, you know, as a vet, as a environmentalist a lot of the time. And there are a lot of sacrifices that get made with that, you know, the stability of income and somewhere to live. And, you know, I live all over the country. I don't have houses all over the country, but I stay in different places all over the country. I'm constantly traveling. I have very poor financial stability, and it's exhausting, and it really takes its toll. But the trade-off, you know, the other option would be what, you know, a job in inverted commas, which might mean that I couldn't run Seafull in the way that I want to. I couldn't make the decisions that we've made to reach the people that we've reached with Seafull. It would mean that I couldn't make the films that I'm making, that I can't go to places that I need to go to tell the stories that I think need to be told. You know, I couldn't have spent 5 months last year making films about Scotland and about the destruction to seabed habitats, you know. So, I think I have to keep reminding myself why I'm making those choices and why I'm doing what I'm doing. I think if I ever kind of falter with that, all it takes is going back to the sea and being in the sea, being by the sea, speaking to people that I like my kind of people within that space, and reigniting the conversations and reigniting that fire. And I think that's all it takes for me to really kind of then come back to, well, this is what's most important right now. Like I don't need that stability, because this is more important. And in terms of kind of looking after myself, I'm an advocate for self-care, and for self-care is bandied about. It's, you know, it's a bit of an overused term, isn't it? But essentially, for looking after yourself, I really am, but I'm not very good at it. And I think, yeah, I know you're not very good at it either, Eb. You work far too hard. But I think when you've got this fire inside you, it's very, very hard to say, oh, well, that fire can just wait for next week. Like this, you know, this weekend, I'm going to just step away from that burning fire. Like it's very hard to do that. And I think I have to force myself to do it a lot of the time. But again, the way I do it is time in the sea, it's time by the water. And last year, I was really burnt out. I actually took a couple of months away and went to Portugal in my camper van. And I was still working. I still had my laptop and I was doing loads of work while I was there, but at a much slower pace. And it took me the first month just to slow down. And then the second month was really transformative. And I said that I would carry this on for the rest of the year, but I really didn't. But it was, you know, getting up in the morning, going for a long walk on the beach with a cup of tea, going for a surf, having some lunch, and only then opening the laptop and starting the work. So, you know, afternoons were the only times I'd book meetings. Mm. Like afternoons were when I'd sit and work, and, you know, and then I'd have a nice dinner and go to bed early, do the same thing the next day. And it was, I think that's the most well I've been in such a long time. Sunshine, surf, good food, and lots of rest, and hanging out with one of my mates and her dog. Like, so simple, so simple. And I genuinely think that in those like 3 or 4 hours or 5 hours in the afternoons that I was working, I got more work, more good quality work done in that short period of time than I would have done if I'd have been sat behind my laptop for 8 hours, you know, back at home, completely burnt out. So, yeah, I think, sorry, I went a bit off tangent there, but in answer to your question, Ebbed, I think I don't have all the answers and I'm still figuring it out. And I think it is important to figure it out. There's trade-offs. There are definitely trade-offs, but I wouldn't change it. Like, I don't think I could be not just following this path that I think is really important anymore.
Well, yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because when you're kind of, I can relate to a lot of the things you're saying, really, like it feels very mirrored for me in a lot of ways, like kind of there are trade-offs for the freedom of following your passion and your path and like what that looks like. Mm. And obviously from the outside, sometimes when you look at like traditional, you know, career path that someone else might have with like at least an awareness on how much money you're making each year. Mm. So you can sort of, you know, plan ahead in some way, whether you're, you know, just about sort of making bread and, you know, maybe only just keeping the lights on, or whether you've got lots of disposable income. It's a different thing. And it comes with, yeah, like I feel the same as you. It's like it comes with this trade-off, but you just, as long as you can, it sounds like you've got a way of you know, that radar, you're in tune with that in some way, like that kind of, when you feel like things are starting to get too busy, recognizing that you can go back in and have that time. Well, that's what I feel anyway. I mean, I'm speaking for myself here maybe, which is I still get really busy and I sort of get to that point where I feel like I'm really overexerting myself, but I think I'm just getting better at knowing that I can, I can hibernate when I need to as well, even if that's only for like a couple of days now or like a few days, or hopefully that maybe looks like longer periods of time, but I can do that and actually switch off my mind as part of the process. Cause for a long time, that's what I couldn't do. I felt like I had to be doing. And when you don't switch your mind off in that way, even when you give yourself that time off, it's just so detrimental to your mental health.
Massively. I've had periods of being really unwell as well over the last few years. Like I had a period of 18 months where I was really severely depressed, and I had a head injury and I was in a really bad way. And looking back at that now, like I pushed through that whole thing. I like strived through that whole experience. I was striving to get better and I was trying to work and I was, you know, really still pushing so hard. And that, I you know, have no doubt that delayed my recovery. And there have been a few times that that's happened, you know, when I've been ill, whether physically or mentally, and then I've really beaten myself up and like, oh, you're so, you know, you're worthless and you're useless and come on, pull it together and just crack on. And every time, you know, you just end up knackered. And I think now looking back at that, and it's taken far too many experiences to realise it, is kind of, if I'm starting to get that point, it's like, well, do you know what? As clichéd as it sounds, I am going to recover quicker if I just take some time out now. Mm-hmm. And just accept that, you know, I'm human. I'm in my 30s now. I don't bounce back as well as I used to. Like, I've just needed some time. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a big difference between, like, I think maybe anyone listening to this, sometimes I have to work out this, you know, kind of, there's a difference between, say, endurance, right? So there's a certain part of me that I also know needs to tell myself to, like, come on, you can do better than this. Of course, it's really important to have disciplines. I'm reaching for the thing that I know maybe might not, might be a distraction, might not benefit my growth in some way as much as reaching over here, which looks like pushing myself further, you know, like striving to be better. Yes, that's going to hurt. That's outside of your comfort zone. So obviously you can have that voice where you can kind of push yourself further and further. But what you're talking about and what I've experienced, and I'm sure lots of other people have as well, which is if your internal like communication system, you're not listening to your inner voice, which is saying like, hey, I need to sit down for a minute, man. I need to just lay down for a minute. I need to remember what, you know, I need to recalibrate. Because before you set off on that journey of going to push yourself again, unless you recalibrate, you're just where, you know, like I think it's just those two things. I think sometimes, not that we're conflating them now, I'm just highlighting that for anyone listening. I think there's like, there's a difference between pushing yourself beyond yourself to like grow and, you know, build that callus and, or ignoring your mental health and ignoring when you need to slow down and you need that stillness in your life.
Yeah. I think it's about just being honest with yourself, isn't it? It's just like being really, really deeply honest with yourself. And I think like doing the expeditions that I've done now, and it's still hard to do, but you know, I can look back and I can say, well, do you know when I need to push myself, I can push myself. Like there've been times when I've had to really dig deep and really pull out all the stops and, you know, get around a horrendous headland or get to a beach, whatever. And I know that when I put my mind to it, I can do that. And so I don't feel like I need to prove that to myself anymore. But it's also, you're so right. Like, you know, it's so easy to procrastinate or to give yourself excuses. And I think it comes back to being really deeply honest with yourself. Like, what do I actually need right now? And taking a minute to acknowledge that. Like, do I need to stop? Or do I actually really need to keep pushing and to move forward?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think Joshua and I could chat to you for a decade and a day, but we're going to have to wrap up quite soon. But we always want to ask all our guests, you know, what does do something for nothing, you know, mean to you as a concept and a phrase? And how can people who are listening maybe take some inspiration from you and the ocean and Seafull and paddling passing to say, what could they go and do? What could they do something for nothing that might be small or big or medium? To embody that and to support what you're doing. So yeah, what does do something for nothing mean to you, and how can the people listening support you in that way?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think when I first kind of heard you talking about the do something for nothing, I think because our society is so driven by finances, by money, the first thing that comes to mind is do something that I'm not going to get paid for, or do something that there's not going to be any financial return. And I think, like, for me, the idea of doing something for nothing is so much more than that. It's so much more than just doing something that is not going to be, you know, you're not going to be paid for. I think it's an opportunity to actually do something of real value to your heart. Like, what does your heart want to do that is going to benefit other people or the planet? And I genuinely think that the rewards from doing something like that are so huge. Like there's I don't know if I'm explaining myself very well, but you know, this idea of doing something for nothing, I think it might be overtly helping somebody else or helping the planet, but that always comes back to everybody, to the collective whole, to ourselves. Like it's always going to be of benefit to humanity, of everybody. And this idea that we're all connected, and that we're all connected through our seas, through our planet, through each other. You know, I think there's something really beautiful and really powerful about stepping outside of your own little bubble, your own little world, and actually doing something that is going to be of service. And so for me, the idea of doing something for nothing is of being of service to other people and to our planet. And there's so much I think that we can do. But on the kind of topic of Seafall, of what we do with Seafall, and you know, trying to help more people reconnect to our planet, I would really recommend, you know, if you feel like you have a connection to nature, a connection to a part of our planet, whether that's mountains or forests or the park down at the end of your road or a canal or the sea or whatever, if there's something that really speaks to you, that you love, that brings you a lot of joy, is there somebody in your life that maybe doesn't spend time there that you could take there with you one day? Can you go and have that experience with them? Can you give them that opportunity to connect in the way that means so much to you? Can you give them that opportunity as well? And not forcing them to feel what you feel when you're there, but just giving them that insight into somewhere new that they might not otherwise have gone. And I think that's one of the most powerful things that we can do to help connect more people to nature and to our environment.
Definitely. Yeah, honestly, I can't thank you enough. I think that just, I know we're wrapping up, but just one thing that I think I've often thought about that I wanted to share is, you know, I work with a lot of people who are in really, really difficult situations. I think we all have seen in our own life people who maybe we've cared for, people with certain amounts of unbearable pain for certain reasons in their life, who could be suffering from something more recent, something specific. It could be grief or loss, or it could be someone who, you know, has been in a really difficult space for decades now due to sort of unresolved trauma and like kind of, you know, whatever that may look like for them. And I often think sometimes, it's a weird thing, but I have this imagery sometimes of like picking a load of people up. Like imagine these areas, like with these real difficult areas of town, or you've got tent encampments, like I'm speaking from the US right now. And a lot of the cities, you've got these tent encampments with lots of people like living in like really rough situation, you know, like so removed from nature. It's in fact like the dystopian kind of like fallen through the cracks of this modern society. So you're really living in an inner city place, but with nothing. So the conditions are dire sometimes. And I often think, I'm like, what would happen if you could just pick up 100 people from here and just put them in like swim shorts and line them up on the beach and like sort of tell them to run into this cold ocean and just like, yeah, see, like, I know it sounds so stupid, but it could also be like, you know, put them on the beginning of a trailhead to a hike in like the kind of mountains. Yeah. And I'm not talking about for endurance. I'm talking that anyone could, like a novice, yeah, you know? And I'm like, what would happen at the end of that half an hour where they just went and did that? It's not a curable pill. I know, no, it's not, but I really, really do believe in like this kind of awakening that can happen from that. Yeah. This kind of change of a frequency, I mean, really neurologically speaking, but also soulfully, you know? So yeah, I can't stress enough how much I believe in the work you're doing with Seafall and like, yeah, how important it is, how amazing it is. And yeah, how such an inherent part of what it is to have this experience. So thank you, really.
Thank you so much.
Second that. So Cal, where can people find out a little bit more about you? Where can they go online to find out a bit more about you?
About me myself, I'm quite active on Instagram and Facebook. If you just search Cal Major, my Instagram handle is Cal_Major. And on Facebook, I'm Cal Major Ocean Advocate. And then my website's just calmajor.com. And you can find all the films we've made about my expeditions on there. And then Seafall, we are on all the socials as Seafall Charity or Seafall Charity UK. And our website is seafall.org.uk. And we are very proud. We are a very, very small charity, but we're very proud to be collaborative. And we love expanding our community, and we feel very proud of the community that we've created. And I think that's the most powerful thing that we've done is create a community. And so if you would like to be part of our community, please get in touch. You'll find all the contact details on the Seafall website, and it's Seafall, SEAFUL, just one L. It's a play on mindful and the sea. So please get in touch if you'd like to be a part of our journey. We'd love to connect with you.
Thank you, Cal. We can't wait for the Conduit listeners and beyond to hear your story, your reflections, your advice. It's been very healing, I think, for Joshua and I to listen from London and Colorado, respectively. So
thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Nice one. Thanks, Cal.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations. If you enjoyed it, then please support and subscribe to the podcast. To learn more about my work, then please visit www.dosomethingfornothing.org or Instagram at dosomethingfornothing and at Joshua Coombs. If you're feeling inspired, then please use the hashtag dosomethingfornothing or hashtag Conduit DSFN.